Sheriff, this is no time to panic.
This is the perfect time to panic!
I'm Steve Vinson, that's Paul Schultz, and this is the Don't Panic Radio Show. Nothing you're about to hear is true.
That's so good.
Wouldn't it be nice if I had a little, like, if we had a little, like, I'm Steve Vinson, that's Paul Schultz, and this is the Don't Panic Radio Show, where you can sit back, relax, and ignore the news. And nothing you're about to hear is true.
That actually, you know, what are we in, year four now?
Yeah. That freaked me out the other day. We were messaging with Andy. I love those messages with the William Wright.
That's right.
And I was going to say, you know, we've been doing this for like 2 years. I'm like, wait a minute. 2014, 15, 16, 3 years. 3 years? What? This would be season four if we were still keeping track of seasons.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love coming home from the grocery store and turning on my tablet and having it sound like popcorn being made in the microwave. And I look on my messages and there's like 800 messages between you and him. And I'm like, damn it, I gotta read all this just to even say anything.
Yeah, we're all like, where's Paul? What's Paul doing? What? Come on, Paul.
Paul likes his anonymity. He likes being away from the interweb when he wants to be.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, so he had that classic, he's got these two buddies that he wants to make a podcast with.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the classic resistance move. Like, resistance is, I think of resistance as an actual person, right? And mm-hmm. this person thrives on me not getting anything done.
Yeah. Right?
So they will do anything and everything to keep me from doing something. And one of the most devious things that it'll do, that he'll do, is convince me that when I finally put this work out into the world, it has to be just, if not perfect, it's got to be great. Because the last thing I want is for people to hear it and be turned off, and now my reputation's ruined.
Right.
So as a result, I got to spend a lot of time planning. I got to make sure that I feel good when I do it. I got to be ready. I got to be ready to go. And that resistance is just sitting back going, yeah, that's right. You worked hard today. You made an outline. You worked really hard. You deserve the day off. It's like, I did work. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And then meanwhile, you never get your actual thing done. Now, what you and I did, as some listeners will recall, is we said, hey, we already know we have chemistry. We already know we're the right two people to do a show. We have no idea what that show is going to be about.
We didn't.
But it's like, but one thing we do know is everything that's any good, if you go back, like if you went back and listened to Bruce Springsteen's like demo tapes from when he was first starting out, he probably sounds like an asshole, right? Probably sounds horrible.
Yeah.
And so what we knew is the first thing that any creative person does, the first few things, you've got to have those things for people to go back to and say, God, that was awful. Wow, I can't believe that these guys who are really good at what they do put that piece of shit together, you know?
Yeah.
So we knew we had to get those done.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's how it is. I mean, working 13 years drawing comic books, the first... You know, you did that. I did those first couple issues, and I thought they were great. And now I look at them, and I have to tell myself that's where I was as an artist. Not these things are shit, but that's where I was as an artist. And that's where, you know, that's it, like you said, resistance is a person. Yeah. And it's just, it's like, it's tricking you.
Yeah.
Constantly. It's like, just, what? same thing. It happens to me too with my visual art. Is like I can sit here all day and visualize how I want to lay something out, or I could get about 50% of it in my head and then just grab my shit and start doing it.
Right.
And I'll make mistakes, and I'll throw one away. I'll do it 2 or 3 times. I like this part of this drawing, and don't like this one or this one, and fuse it together. So you just kind of have to just jump into it. And the only thing we had for a show was the idea that, and it's weird because maybe it's also like for ourselves, but with the title, the idea was that, you know, nothing is as drastic as it seems. And that includes plotting out how to make a podcast,
right?
You know, we winged it for the most part. Just, you know, and it shows over the years the difference of not just like production value, because we have a wonderful producer. He's great.
He's awesome. He doesn't get enough credit.
And early on, you know, using this software versus what we're using now. Not talking about that. I'm just talking about the show itself has mutated from where we were to where we are now, just as we've evolved as people. Yeah. You know? We're not the same people we were 3 or 4 years ago when we got started. You know, we've hopefully learned some things.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it shows in the content of the show now.
So today we're going to talk about...
That was for a super fan, James, because he doesn't think I talk enough.
Yeah, that was great. Thank you.
Sorry.
And to interrupt, today we have a softcore history I think you're going to like. It is the result of a request from my brother.
Hmm.
And we also, in the second half, it's going to be kind of, as Paul just described, it's going to be a little bit freeform because we have a couple of ideas. Probably talk about black people because we've been talking about black people a lot lately. So talk about that. Maybe Superfly, maybe TNT. Superfly, TNT. Maybe Shaft. Shut your mouth. And we had birthday parties this weekend. So,
oh, yeah.
You know, we'll get into some of that in the second half. So back on topic, you know, I started a podcast with a friend of mine from work. Mm-hmm. And with the same philosophy, just start.
Yeah.
Set up the microphone in between us and just started. And Superfan James might think you don't talk. I couldn't get this guy to say anything.
It's like that episode of the Brady Bunch when the little Brady girl goes on whatever the game show is. And as soon as that red light comes on top of the camera, she just freezes up.
Exactly.
It sounds like it should be easy to do. You and I, we've talked for decades now.
Well, it's like we said, you know, we wish we had had a microphone, you know, following us around our whole life, because there was some funny stuff going on. Mm-hmm. It was the same with this guy, only on a philosophical sort of creativity level.
Mm-hmm.
He and I had hours long conversations about how to do fiction. He's the guy that's published a book, or he's trying to get a publishing deal. Anyway, he's got a novel he's trying to get published. But anyway, he and I would just go on and on for hours, and it was great, and it was deep, and it was like, man, if anybody would just listen to us, their lives would be perfect. Like, oh, let's do a podcast. So set up the microphone and nothing. So here's the thing, though. Here's what you got to know, man, is how many years could you go saying, ooh, I bet we would be good together as in a podcast. But you never set it up because you go, oh, I got to be ready and I'm not sure if it'll be good. And you let resistance stop you.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, you're not doing something else. So the quicker you can set a microphone up between the two of you and find out that you have no chemistry in that way,
mm-hmm.
the better. Because now you can like throw away that idea and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
Right. That's the other thing resistance will do. not only is it keeping you from doing the thing you want to do right now, but it's keeping you from doing all those other things you don't even know about yet. Because you know, you might fail. It might suck. And if it does, good. You're done with it. Throw it away. Yeah. Move on to the next thing.
I've failed at quite a few things. I don't even count anymore. I count the things that don't fail.
Yeah, no kidding. They're easier to count. So that's our show today. I think it's that was a pretty good topic. We didn't even say we were going to talk about that. But I thought about a William Wright's messaging us, and I love it. Please keep doing that. By the way, anybody else that wants to, Walsdorf, SFJ.
Oh, yeah.
Michael, Ray, Vincent, anybody. Who am I forgetting? Uncle Carl, Andy. Just all of SFJ's friends whose names I can never remember. Megan.
the one.
Mrs. SFJ.
That's right.
Super fan. Yeah, you can set up a group conversation with us and you'll laugh. We're just funny.
Yeah, like we will. I mean, if William Wright will say anything about us, we literally will talk about anything.
And it's almost like we're lonely because all he's got to do is send one message. The next hour, that's all we're doing.
I know. One day we should just do a read.
Yeah. Just read some of it. Yeah, I like that. I like that. I always feel a little bit bad because he'll say something serious and then we'll just take it off in some direction. All right. So let's get to the meat of the show.
All right.
Let's do a little softcore history.
Oh yeah.
When's the last time you went an entire day without eating? Or maybe you just skipped lunch and breakfast one day. Think about that hunger. Not like the late night run to Taco Bell for fourth meal kind of hungry. I mean the kind where you forgot to eat all day and now you're working late, the vending machine is broken kind of hungry. Your stomach's growling, it like hurts.
Mm.
Drinking water doesn't even seem to help.
It makes it worse.
You would kill for a Hershey's Kiss. You're so hungry. just that deep down hunger, right? And I'm just talking about you just missed a couple of meals. Now imagine you didn't just forget to eat for a day, but you're on day two of one of those weird fasting diets that everybody seems to be on these days. Maybe you're on a juice diet, or maybe you're on that weird 100 calorie a day, and you're well into your second day. You can't feel your tongue, and you feel like you could walk through a wall because everything's vibrating so much. You know that feeling. You're just super hungry, right? Hangry. You're like delirious with hunger. Have you done that? Have you imagined that? Now you got you remember that feeling. Okay, now. Imagine doing that for 25 days. Only water for 25 days. What in your life would be worth doing a 25-day fasting protest? What are you passionate enough about to feel that gnawing hunger for 25 days? For one migrant farmer turned labor organizer in Arizona in 1968, his cause was a nonviolent answer to a labor strike that was on the verge of blowing up. Cesar Chavez is now a hero to laborers and Latin Americans and has a day named after him. But in 1968, he was on the verge of death. Anonymous, unsuccessful, kind of a stupid death. He almost starved himself to death. In some ways, Chavez's story parallels the story of labor unions in the United States. Born out of desperation, crushed by wealthy oligarchs, a return to grassroots activism, the threat of violence, And in some cases, the breakout of open violence and sabotage, ultimately to find a peaceful solution and solve the problems of the people that the that they represent. This is the story of Cesar Chavez. I didn't know a lot about Cesar Chavez. It's almost like a joke. Like us. Mm-hmm. Hey, who are you? Cesar Chavez? Right?
And, yeah.
And then I used to get Cesar Chavez confused with Che Guevara.
You know what? I think 90% of Americans get the two mixed up.
I would agree. I mean, the moment you mentioned Cesar Chavez, people are kind of like, oh, socialist, communist. Right? Mm-hmm. Wait, I think you're thinking of Che Guevara. Oh, who's that? He's that. See that guy that wouldn't eat grapes in Cuba? You're like, no. You're half right.
He's the guy that you're wearing on your t-shirt, you hipster.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, Che Guevara was all about violence. Cesar Chavez was all about nonviolence. Cesar Chavez was born in Yuma, Arizona. And his parents were farmers. The Depression hit, and they lost their farm. In fact, they got kicked off of their farm by the people that took over their farm. So already, he's, you know, early in life, he's already seeing he does not like the man, so to speak.
Right.
So they moved out to California to pick lettuce and vegetables and just follow the crops around with all the other migrant workers, mostly Hispanic, Filipino, a lot of Mexican workers and stuff. But the point to remember is he was born in America. So he was Mexican-American in the same way you're German-American, right?
Right, right.
So it's not like he was an immigrant.
Right.
In fact, interestingly enough, we'll get into this a little bit later, he was anti-immigration, anti-illegal immigration.
Hmm.
We'll talk about why a little bit later. Okay, so he's out there seeing how these workers are being treated, which was like garbage. Because it's like, what are you going to do? Right.
Right.
You're like a lot of them were there as immigrants and couldn't get other work anywhere. So the owners were just said, what are you going to do? Right.
Right.
I'll just hire another batch.
It's like the grapes of wrath that cracked me up because that's what they were. They were, you know, migrant farmers. They went from, you know, farm to farm, and in this entire cast, there's like one family of Mexicans.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know whether that was just the movie or the book, because I can't remember how the book was, but yeah, it's...
So, he left farming for a little while, became a community activist in the big city, and then he was asked to come and help the farmers out, and he knew the plight. Not the farmers, but the workers, the farm workers.
Mm-hmm.
So he went out there, decided, hey, if we could organize, because this is now we're into the late 50s, early 60s, you know, the labor movement. He can get inspiration from that, but he also was getting inspiration from Martin Luther King, and kind of seeing it as these one of the reasons that these farm workers don't have any rights is because they're you know, Mexicans, Filipinos, just Hispanics in general, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he thought, well, let me take some inspiration from those two places. Tried to organize, but the landowners just would refuse to negotiate. So the people that own the farms are just like, screw you, whatever. What do you want from us?
Yeah, and there's a whole bunch more just like you waiting to get this job.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
So they called a general strike, right? They just... screw it. We're going on strike. So they go on strike, but as expected, you know, the farm owners are able to keep the farms going, just bring in other workers, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the strike goes on for a couple of years, you know, with no progress, right? They're just, they were helping each other out, you know, and one of the things he did is, one of the things that the landowners would do to they would divide and conquer, right? They would get the Filipinos to They're like, hey, Filipinos, you know, look at what the Mexicans are doing. And hey, Mexicans, yeah, look what the Filipinos are doing. And they would get them like at each other's throats, right? One of the things Chavez did is he went to the Filipinos and he said, let's work together.
Yeah, we got them outnumbered.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, what he would do when he would form these strike kitchens and strike picket lines and stuff, he would make sure there was always like some Mexicans, some Filipinos, mm-hmm, make sure that it was all kind of mixed in, and make sure the leadership had mixed in, you know, people from all sides. And he was very adamant about the nonviolence. But as the time went on without progress, a lot of people, especially the Filipinos, I don't know why the Filipinos, but especially the Filipinos, they were saying, this isn't working. We're going to have to start burning crops, sabotage. We'll have to like block the replacement workers from getting in. And Chavez was losing his grip on the whole situation.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is, if violence breaks out, it's not just workers and farm owners. It's people's families and, you know, the people's livelihoods, and people are going to die.
Yeah.
Right. To the Filipinos, it was the only way. Or to Filipinos, and not just the Filipinos, but also some of the Mexicans and everything, it was the only way. And they were like, you're being foolish, Cesar Chavez, thinking that you're going to get anything done without using some kind of force. Right.
Right.
Especially if you look at the history of labor unions, they you know, in the early 20th century, late 19th century, they were using force,
mm-hmm,
with some success. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And their philosophy was, if we go on strike, nobody's getting in here,
yeah,
to do the work. And they would physically harm people who would try to get in.
Like the coal miner strikes and stuff, yeah, like that, where that shit got real, real fast.
Yeah. Yeah, where the government comes in and uses, you know, the army, basically, yeah, to force people to, you know, to break up the picket lines, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So he gets desperate, Mr. Chavez, Senor Chavez. All right, he's American. I'll call him Mr. Chavez. His mama called him Mr. Chavez. Daddy called him Mr. Chavez. I'm going to call him Mr. Chavez.
He beat Joe Louis's ass.
Yeah. What about Rocky Marciano?
Rocky Marciano was 90 years old.
What about the Rocky Marciano? Ah, there you go. Every time we start talking about boxing, some white dude got to bring up Rocky Marciano. Okay, so the whole thing's about to blow up, and he's not sure what to do, so he decides to go on a hunger strike, and he decides to just not eat, only water, right? And at first, everybody's like, oh, yeah, that's cute. Right? How long can that last? And then, you know, and the farm owners are like, okay, whatever, what is, you know, but the news picks up on it. After, mm-hmm, you know, like a week of not eating, dude's starting to get sick. He's also a devout Catholic. So he had, instead of having like organizational meetings every week or every day, he would just have mass. So the priest would do mass, right? And there he's sitting there super hungry. Everybody else gets some food. He doesn't get some food. And it just started to take on this like revival feeling.
That's got to be, that's commitment, dude, because if he's killing himself by not eating, and if you're Catholic, the whole killing yourself is like, yeah, no, you've officially been kicked off the bus when it comes to the afterlife. So he was risking a lot when you think about it. If he was in fact religious enough to believe that, he was risking a lot.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm sure there have been books written that would examine whether he believed it was equivalent to suicide, or if he thought it was more like a martyr, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah.
So anyway, he got enough attention. He called for a general boycott of grapes, because grapes was one of the, you know, cash crops.
Oh yeah.
And he was able to get people, because, you know, you go on strike, and the farm owners are kind of like, whatever, we'll get people in there to work, whatever. People, you know. But if you hit them where it hurts and you don't buy their damn grapes,
Yeah.
And you get everybody across the country not to buy their damn grapes.
Right.
Now you're hitting them where it hurts. So he was being urged, you know, to stop the hunger strike and everything. After 25 days, he finally ate. And
what did he have? That
piece of bread.
Oh, yeah, because anything else, he probably would have exploded.
It was during one of the services, actually, and they did it sort of ceremonially, like ritualistically, like just brought him this piece of bread or whatever. And, you know, he went in the hospital, they nursed him back to health and everything, and eventually the farm owners caved and negotiated and signed a collective bargaining agreement with the farm workers. So because he was able to avoid the violence and because he was able to improve the working conditions and the pay and everything for these maybe people are like, well, what was the strike all about? Well, they were being, like I said, they were being treated like garbage, being paid nothing, being abused, basically like indentured servitude, right?
Yeah, not much more than a slave.
Yeah. You know, and I talked in the beginning about, I said I would explain why he didn't like illegal immigration. That was part of how they were able, the farm owners were able to keep the strikes from being effective.
Oh, yeah.
Is these illegal immigrants would come over. And so he actually would form like posses and go down to the border and intercept people coming over the border and send them back. And so he was a staunch, you know, anti-illegal immigration, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, I didn't read any books on it. It's softcore history, okay?
That's right.
But what I'd be curious to know is once they got here, like once the illegal immigrants got here, was he all about like kicking them out and deporting them? Or was he more like, okay, well, they're here now. Let's, you know, I don't know.
I'm willing to bet maybe this ties into our irresponsible headline interpretation. But I'm willing to bet that, you know, yeah, once they were here, he was fine with it. As long as, you know.
As long as they didn't. Like, if you get here, we'll help you. But don't, what do they call it when you cross the picket lines? Don't cross the picket lines.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was trying. I lost my train of thought right in the middle of talking. Yeah. But yeah.
You know, labor unions in general. I was curious, like, how far back they go.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter is studying Roman history. Mm-hmm. And, well, they've moved past the Romans, and now they're into the Crusades. That could be a whole show in and of itself right there. Maybe that'll be a softcore history. I'll do, like, Richard the Lionhearted or somebody.
Good times.
Yeah, good times. Ain't we lucky we got them? First, like the earliest incantation of labor unions were the Roman guilds. So what the guilds were is these craftsmen would get together, and in a particular city, they would set the rules for how much you could charge, how much you needed to charge,
yeah,
and like minimum requirements for how you did the work. So if they found out somebody was doing, you know, whatever, blacksmith work, or whatever Romans did back in the day, making swords, and you weren't part of the guild.
Building roads.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And you were in this town. Like, so when you show up to a town, if you're a road builder or bricklayer, you got to figure out the guild system, and you go, and they had, like, ways, like, you would be an apprentice first, they were masters, apprentices, journeymen, and so they had all of these, you know, various levels. And then even after Rome fell, you get into the medieval times, same thing, and these guilds started to like take on like importance of their own, and they would have like these rituals and secrecy, and you know, to the point sort of like the Masons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you go, Masons, what, how is that a thing? And you're like, well, it has its origins in bricklayers, Masons, and mm-hmm. they had all these secretive things because, and this is, so the positive part of the unions, so the guilds or whatever, was, hey, you know, I know that I'm getting a certain quality because they have this whole training program.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side, there's no innovation going on because they're the secret of society. It's not clear how to join them, right?
Right.
And so how do I know that, you know, Joe Blow wouldn't be a better Mason, but he can't get into the secret society, right? Fast forward to modern times, and people always go, oh, man, you got to, hey, do you like your 40-hour work week and your 2 weeks of vacation, blah, blah, blah? Think a union, you know. Think a union member. And I go, okay, collective bargaining in general is a good idea in theory. Because like with Cesar Chavez, I mean, how would those workers ever have gotten a better deal if they didn't band together, right? Mm-hmm. But what people got to recognize is, like any large organization, eventually the guild, the union, the whoever, is corruption's going to get in there, and the people at the top are going to get power hungry, and it's going to get corrupted, and it's going to, then you'll have the drawbacks of, you know, unsafe workers will be protected, or people who aren't really doing their jobs will be protected, and people will be overpaid because you just distort the market with corruption, right? Mm-hmm. So same thing happened to the farm workers. Cesar Chavez gets later in life, and he's kind of like trying to figure out his place in the world again, and he gets angry about pesticides. So he does like a 30-some-day fast with the pesticides.
This Man, is the, what's five more days?
Yeah, what's five more days? This is in the 80s. And just to show you how little impact that had, I don't remember it being in the news, right?
No.
I don't remember anybody telling me not to eat grapes. I don't remember any of it.
All I remember news in the 80s was Reagan. It was always on the news.
Reaganomics. So he died in like the late 80s, and at that time it's kind of like, well, did he really, was he successful? Did he really accomplish what he wanted? Well, eventually he became like this folk hero, and the, you know, they named days after him, and like he is the symbol of, you know, Hispanic unity. He's sort of like the Hispanic Martin Luther King Jr. So, and that was Softcore History.
Last year, Billy Jack became one of the most popular pictures of our time. Walking Tall was applauded by audiences across the nation. Now, Charles Bronson is Mr. Majestic in a movie that touches the hero in all of us. Vincent Majestic was an ordinary man. He wanted to work his farm, live his life, mind his business.
Hey, didn't somebody say something about a cold beer after work?
But they wouldn't let him.
Hey, I don't think I know you.
Come over from La Junta with some top hand pickers.
I hire who I want.
Yeah, well, you see, you want me. Only, it ain't sunk into that thick brain of yours yet.
They frightened his workers.
Tell them they don't work here anymore.
You got 2 minutes to get the hell in your cars and get out of here.
They tortured his friends.
They do this to me. Never kill you.
They threw him in jail.
You understand your rights under the law?
I understand I should keep my mouth shut.
They destroyed his crops. They forced him to become what he never meant to be, a hero. Why are they calling Mr. Majestic the one movie you must see this year? Ask anyone who's seen it. Anyone. Charles Bronson is Mr. Majestic. In a movie that touches the hero in all of us.
If you're down in Acuna and you ain't up to being alone, don't spend all your money on just any honey that's grown. Go find the Mexican blackbird and send all your troubles. Dancing and all loving's her trade. keep your hands on the wheel.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, you know, last week we were talking about our, you know, what we had coming up on the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And we both had 10-year-olds turning 10 having parties, sleepovers. Mm-hmm. So I got out of like the part where there's a bunch of kids running around because we had to divide and conquer. We had to split up and play man to man. Instead of zone. Mm-hmm. And my oldest was running the spotlight for the school musical.
And oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I saw pictures. Yeah.
Yeah. So the eighth graders do every year do a musical. And the seventh graders, a small portion of this. Well, the seventh graders help. Subset of the seventh graders get to be on the crew. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of them work like the concession stand and help sell tickets and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, my oldest got to be on the crew, and not only did she get to be on the crew, but she got to be one of the three people running the spotlights. And she got to be the center spotlight, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I was there Friday night. I volunteered to work the concession stand, which basically meant two things. One, keep an eye on the seventh graders running the, like, selling stuff, right? I was super impressed, by the way, with this one kid was, like, he seemed to be the one handling the money. And I was kind of watching him. Dude was making change like a boss, which I guess I probably could have done that in seventh grade, but I was just sitting there thinking, he is not even flustered. Like, I would have been flustered, like, I don't know. You know. But he was just like, boom, boom. Oh, you got a 20. Okay, I put that under here. Grab this. There you go. You know, he was just, I was like, dude, you got this, man. You're good at this. He's like, yeah. So that was cool. And then once the show started, they all went in to watch the show. And I hung out in the lobby, kept an eye on things. So I missed, like, the first act, but during the second act I went ahead and like poked my head in. They did The Little Mermaid, the musical, all right?
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't have a handle on who everybody was, okay, when I poked my head in during the second half. I'm somewhat familiar with the story of mm-hmm. The Little Mermaid.
Yeah.
But I wasn't thinking about all the characters. So I poked my head in, and there's this dude standing on the stage with this, like, I can't even describe it. It's a red pantsuit, right? And it's like layered with sequins and sort of pleats going down, and he's got this like a bowler hat with the brim. I don't know what you call them, but like the a round hat with a nice wide brim on it. Mm-hmm. And he's got red gloves on, and I'm like, just and the pants kind of flared out at the bottom, like bell bottoms, right? And I'm standing there looking at this, going, I didn't know the Little Mermaid had a pimp in it. And he happened to be a young African American gentleman of color, so that added to the pimpiness. I don't mean to be racist, but
he was probably also Sebastian, which is even that's a pimp name right there.
He was Sebastian, and he had the Jamaican accent down. So the next night, actually, I got to go see the musical. I got my own seat and got to watch it and everything, right? So during intermission, I go up, you know, get some water or something. I'm walking back, and I see off to my left is this group of dads, right, from the dads club, sitting around talking. So I'm like, I peel off and go over there to talk to them, and they're just kind of like hands in their pockets, like, yep. You know, kind of like Family Guy, where they're all King of the Hill. King of the Hill.
Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Yep. Yep.
And who is standing there but 10?
Oh.
The guy who experienced the racism of my dog, right?
It's like, hey, there's Steve with his racist dog.
Yeah. 10, and then a couple other white dudes and another black dude who is really black in name, I guess.
Mm.
Other than Leslie White, he's kind of the least black person I know. That's really racist. I'm sorry, Leslie. I'm not sure if you're still listening, but anyway. So I'm standing there and I go, they're like, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, not bad. I said, I got a question. Why does Sebastian look like a pimp? And everybody loses it, right?
And then Steve is never afraid to say what everyone is thinking.
Then the laughter dies down, and I go, my mermaids better have my money. I probably should have said gold pieces, because it's right. Nautical theme. My pieces of eight. My mermaids better have my pieces of eight.
Shakespeare.
You need an ATM? This is an ATM. Bring me my pieces of eight. Anyway, so that was good though. I was impressed with these eighth graders. They're like, it blows my mind that eighth graders can do this.
Yeah,
you know, there were a few people who weren't good, but you know,
yeah.
All in all, it was good. So, and then the party. I came back and they were already down here in the rec room, kind of winding down. So. But I had to do pickup duty the next day. I hate pickup duty.
Yeah, we talked a little bit during pickup duty. You and I,
we were chatting on the messenger thing.
Yes,
yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, first of all, who in the hell picks their kid up at 8?
Mm-mm.
Right,
mine is 10 o'clock because my ass ain't getting out of bed till 8. Because I was
like, you ain't getting your kid until 10.
I'm holding your kid hostage. Because
your kids is mine's until 10.
Your kid kept me up till 4 o'clock in the morning. You ain't getting him till 10. And I'm going to put his ass to work in the morning. And I
right?
will too.
Oh, but they have gymnastics. I don't give a damn about gymnastics.
You should have thought that through.
You should have thought that through.
How much shit so, you going to make your kid do in the weekend?
So I didn't even think of that. So I'm up at 7:30. So
yeah,
I kind of pull my shit together before they get there. You know, then they get there and I'm like, do I invite them in? The house is a wreck. Do I invite them in? Do I stand at the door?
Yes.
What do I do? You know, it's a whole mess. It's a whole mess, man. And I put on a hat. You know, put on my jeans with no underwear.
Get your Sebastian pimp hat.
I'm a Sebastian pimp hat.
So here's a Little Mermaid. Here's a
are you here with my pieces of eight?
That's right. See, my thing about that is if, like, okay, pick up for me is 10 o'clock in the morning. If you, as a parent, don't come in to my house the night before, when you're dropping your kid off. No, you're not coming in now. You had your chance, you know, last night when I was civilized. Yeah. Now just take your damn kid, who I've had packed since 9 o'clock in the morning, to get out the door. Because I'm not a morning person. You just take your kid and make sure it's the right one and make sure, you know, it has all this shit. So don't you come back to get anything.
I just woke up. I'm confused. I'm trying to figure out life all over again.
That's right.
and they're not gone 10 minutes, right? Mm-hmm. Before my kid is going, oh, so-and-so left their jacket.
Take it to him in school.
That's right. That's right. Take it to him in school. Or in an ideal world, take it to him in school. In the real world, I'll keep tripping over it for the next 15 weeks. Right? Whose is this? Oh, that's Amber's. Like, oh, well, goddamn Amber.
If Amber's parents didn't think about, you know, it was that important to come get it 15 weeks ago.
Yeah.
See, the thing I learned, that you know, for us, we didn't do a sleepover this time. We just had, my youngest had a couple of, I think we ended up with like 10 small people in my house. Hmm. Now, we spent about 2 days prepping. And when the time came, I had, you know, beer in the fridge for the adults. I had a pot of coffee set up, ready to go, and I even made it for humans, not for me. So everything was set. And the thing I noticed was, like, there was adults did not want to stick around. They would basically throw the kid out the door, like for 2 hours.
Free babysitting.
For 2 hours, they're free.
Y'all free.
Y'all free. But like, so here I got this weak-ass coffee and, you know, all this beer sitting in the fridge going to waste. Well, it didn't go to waste. But, no, the adults don't like to come in. They just will, like, throw the kid out, you know, roll, you know, as they go driving by. But we had a good time. I mean, we did, it was a Five Nights at Freddy's themed party. And I had a laptop set up, and the kids, you know, they'd rotate playing between Freddy's and, what was that, Roblox, I think is the other game they were playing, and music on the TV, and it was just chaos and bedlam for 2 hours. And I remember I was sitting on the couch, and my oldest was sitting nearby, and I looked up at the clock, and I'm like, it has only been 15 minutes. Like, oh, we've been doing this for an hour and a half. No, Dad, it's only been 15 minutes. We still have 45 minutes before she opens the presents. Like this, I told her, this is why we only do this for 2 hours. You know, because she was the one.
Later.
Right. She was the one that had the when she turned 9, I let her have 9 friends spend the night, and they were up till 4 o'clock in the morning. That's never going to happen again. But it was something. It was an experiment to see, and it was a successful failure.
Right. It's like we talked at the beginning of the show.
Right.
Had you not done that, you might have waited until she was like 14, and you'd have 14 moody 14-year-olds at your house.
And you, speaking of moody teenagers, and you have 2 girls. I have 2 girls and a boy. And you don't, one of the things you'll unfortunately never really experience is there's a distinct difference between a boy party and a girl party. I will host a girl party any day of the week over a boy party. Because a boy party, at some point, a kid jumps on the counter with a conch. And it's just, you know, they're the worst.
It's on now.
They're the worst parties ever. But girl parties are hysterical because they're like, especially at 10, you know, they're like, it's like watching a whole bunch of little old ladies. It's adorable. It's just like, because they dress in purple, they have bad hair, they talk about the most ridiculous things that are like super important, and they're it's just like watching this is like what an old folks home must be like, but full of women. It's just it's so funny to watch them. Boys, it stinks. There's a lot of farting that goes on. There's usually punching involved at some point. I will always host girl parties over boy parties. And unfortunately, my son doesn't really get into the party thing, so he just has a friend of his will spend the night, and that'll be it. But it's still as bad as it smells in his room. Imagine, like, I think about what 10 kids in that room would smell like.
Did we smell like that back in the day?
Probably. I want to say no, but probably.
Yeah.
We smelled like mom. We smelled like Doritos feet and ass.
Yeah.
That's the typical boy smell.
Without the Doritos, we couldn't afford Doritos.
No, you had like the Nacho-ritos or whatever.
Yeah. Scott Ladd brand or whatever. Bonnie.
The Bonnie Doritos.
Man. I tell you, man, I know about the boy thing, though, because we talked about this after my daughter had her Christmas party with where the whole class showed up.
Mm.
And they practically destroyed the entire
downstairs.
Oh,
yeah, yeah, they will.
We are still finding stuff that these freaking little monsters.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, are you kidding me? Thankfully, she hasn't started dating yet. And she talks about liking boys and stuff, but... That's kind of gone by the wayside over the last year. So I think she's like looking at him going, these are lunatics. Why would I want to be associated with that?
I still remember to this day when my oldest was maybe three years old and Michael from Sweden was over and... He couldn't get over how pretty my oldest was. And they were talking, and he took one of her dolls, and he's like, now, you see this? See this doll? Wham! He, like, slams his head on the footstool, and he goes, this is what your Uncle Michael is going to do to the first boy who breaks your heart.
That's hilarious.
She got that a lot. Just about every guy that came into my house. That's what he's watching. Like, it was a great.
I thought it was going to be like he was going to teach her what boys are like. See, I'm a boy. I did that. That's what boys will do. But I like his approach better. Oh man! So I was my accountant. Apparently, they passed a law that says if you have somebody do your taxes for you, you got to give them a copy of your driver's license.
Mm.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So my lovely bride has kept her old driver's license because she likes the picture better. So this morning I did to this day. This is weird. Was your mom weird? Not weird, but like, was your mom's purse like off limits?
Yeah, well, yes. Yeah, my ex-wife and I used to fight about that because she would be like, go in my purse and get my gum.
You're like, no.
I would just hand the purse. She's like, just go into it. I said, no. And to
it's
this
like
day,
it might as well be a bear trap.
Yeah, yeah. There might be a bear trap in there.
Yeah, I mean, for all I know.
My dad... He's 80 years old this year. They've been married like 50 years. He will not go into her purse.
Well, it was from an early age.
What's going on in there?
From an early age, it was clear
mm-hmm.
that we were not to go into my mom's purse, right? And that stuck with me. But through years of therapy and a lot of ridicule, similar to what you just described, I will now go into my wife's purse, but only in a dire emergency.
Yes.
And so my accountant was waiting for a copy of her driver's license. So this morning, finally, after my accountant bugged me enough times, I finally got in her purse, got in her wallet, got the driver's license, made the copy, and I don't know why, but for some reason I was looking at it and noticed that it was expired. And I was like, huh. Oh, I know why. I know why. Because I was going to put the license back in her purse into her little wallet thing and the little slide it into the, with the little clear window thing. And I was like, wait, I'm sliding the license back in, but the license is already there. Huh? She has two licenses in her purse. The new one that she doesn't like the picture of and the old one that shows through the window, I guess in case she gets her purse snatched. She doesn't want the robber to open it up and see the most recent one that she doesn't like. I don't know. So anyway, I went and made that. I went and had to redo it, recopy it, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So then I'm at work and I'm getting mine out and I'm like, well, I better check my expiration date, right? 33 days. Like, holy crap, I got to get my license renewed. It wasn't even on my radar, right?
Right.
So the reason I posted that on Facebook was it was a moment, right? And you never know what moments are going to resonate with people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also today, well, no, yesterday late, so these two things are going to be related. So you got to bear with me a little bit. So you got the whole driver's license story, right?
If I've learned one thing about you, it's all related. You just have to stick around long enough.
You stick around long enough, it'll all come back together.
You're like a beautiful mind. You got like all these strings going everywhere. Trust me, it'll all eventually come into something.
All right. So last night, I'm going through people, and I've been seeing these for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. All these women are posting, what would you look like as a man, right? And they're posting and it's like, wow, man, that's I can kind of see it, but they totally look like a man in the second picture, right?
Yeah.
You got this beautiful woman, pretty face, man, right? And you go, that's not a pretty man. That's a man, right? And you go, wow, that's kind of cool. So finally I thought, I'm going to try it because it says, what would you look like as the opposite gender, right? It's not like woman. So I was like, I'll do it. So I go in there and it's like, are you a man or a woman? I'm like, I'm a man. It's like, all right, we're going to show you what you're going to look like as a woman. And I hit the thing and then it does that swirly thing like it's thinking.
Yeah. And the which longer it takes, you're like, oh, shit, this is going to be bad.
Yeah. Oh, it's working hard, you know?
What do we tell this guy?
Like, it's like deep thought from you know, it's like, oh, it's going to take me. I have to think about it for a little while. How long? 10 million years.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Anyway, so it thinks for a little while, and it spits out the answer, and I'm looking at it. And my what would you look like as a woman looks almost exactly like me as a man. And I'm staring at it for like 5 minutes. Yeah. And I'm like, did this artificial intelligence believe that I already look like a woman? Is that what it's saying? Or is it saying, yeah, basically, if you were a chick, you would pretty much look exactly like you do now.
When that popped up, I was reading the comments and I literally laughed out loud about Tolan's comment.
So that is that's one of the reasons I brought this up.
I mean, my kids heard me laugh. I mean, I was just like, because it was so subtle.
My friend Anna, like, never calls me, never texts me, never anything, right? She lives in Pennsylvania. We see her once every few years when we go out to Ragbri. Sometimes she rolls through town. Anyway, we were friends in Chicago. Rarely see her now. I look at my phone after I'd had it sitting somewhere, and I pick it up. It's like, missed call from Anna. I'm like, ooh, something wrong? Why is Anna calling me? And I see a text. I'm like, ooh, a text from Anna. And the text just says, dude, I laughed so hard. And the voicemail. So I have not listened to the voicemail. but you know, iPhone will transcribe it for you. So we're going to listen to it together.
All right. I was hoping you were going there.
Hi, Steve. This is Anna. I have to say, I just finished laughing so hard I was crying on your Facebook post, but you have to read my comments in order. First, you have to read what I posted on your post about having to copy your driver's license, and then after that, on your woman version of yourself and the picture of the man version of you and the woman version of you. Okay, that's it. And I've never called somebody to tell them how hard I laugh about their Facebook stuff. All right, have a great day. Bye.
So we're going to do that right now.
Okay.
Anna's hilarious, by the way. So she said read the driver's license one first, right? So I got to get a... So, all right, let me get the driver's license one. Here we go. Again, after I posted it, I thought, eh, I don't know if that one, I don't know if people will really be that interested in that one.
Mm.
But, yeah, here we go. So the post was making copy of my driver's license for accountant. Notice it expires in 33 days. Yikes. Lance Rieger says, your accountant isn't old enough to buy their own beer? So my reply was, nope, but she's a savant when it comes to slinging numbers around.
That's what you want. Like that seventh grader that was running the concessions.
Exactly. He could be my accountant. So Anna says, so not only is she not old enough to buy her own beer, but she looks like a 48-year-old, 6-plus-foot male named Steve Stevenson Vinson. Who's your buddy? No one. No one is her buddy. All right. So now we're going to skip over to that who's your buddy, by the way,
mm-hmm.
That's a whole story that I may have told on the show at one time. But so now we're going to jump over to me as a man and me as a woman. I just said I have no words. Scott Tolan's response was, it appears that you would still love women either way.
I laughed out loud.
Yeah. William Wright just said, wait, ... So Ed Lucas says, I see no difference whatsoever. And I said, I'm trying to figure out what that means. Would I look exactly the same as a chick? And Anna replies, oh my God, is this your accountant? And then on a separate, like, so that was 6 hours ago that Anna said that. And then 5 hours ago, so an hour later, Anna comes back and says, I am laughing so hard, I have tears, and I made my baby cry. And then an hour after that, Anna comments, I just keep going back to study it and laugh and laugh and laugh. If you were just a tidbit more pale, I think you'd be a woman. And also, no penis. I like Pat Henninger's. It's like, put the butthead thing, and it says, come to butthead. Oh, my God. I mean, I'm rolling. Thank you, Anna. I don't know if Anna listens. Probably not.
She will now.
She will now. I'll in fact, maybe I'll just take that little clip and send it to her. But hilarious.
About 2 weeks ago, my son joined Facebook. And this afternoon he comes around the corner. He's like, so I'm just scrolling through my Facebook. And I came across this, and it's your driver's license. He's just like, he doesn't know what to make of it. I'm just like,
wait, the post or my profile picture?
Your profile picture of your driver's license, and I came across this. Oh, like, yeah, well.
There's a story about that. There's a story about everything. So when I make the copy of my driver's license, and I get back to my, you know, I'm like, I scanned it in, and I'm like opening it up to make sure it's scanned in okay. And I'm like, holy hell, look at that picture. So I was like, okay, that's got to be my profile picture.
They are not flattering photographs.
So here was my thought, right? This was at a time in my life. Hang on a second.
Mm-hmm.
So 2-3 years ago, I don't know, last time I got my driver's license renewed.
Mm-hmm.
And I had noticed at some point that I look better in pictures if I make sure my eyes are open, right? Because
otherwise you look dead.
Right. Well, I have this, like, my forehead is, gravity is taking its toll on my forehead. It's like coming down over my eyes, and, you know.
Well, at least you got plenty of shade.
Yeah, it's true. So apparently at one point, somebody's taking a picture, and I made sure I opened my eyes a little bit. I was like, wow, that looks good. Like, I saw the picture and I thought, that looks good. I look fresh. I look younger. That's
you
great.
You look fresh.
So when I went to get my picture for my license, I thought, oh, I'll do that. I'll open my eyes a little bit. And you guys got to go check out this picture.
It'll be in the YouTube version of this episode.
Awesome. The only thing I was disappointed that nobody has made, I'm sure somebody has, but I couldn't find it, like one of those little things that they put at the bottom of mugshots.
Because
that would have been, I can't even describe this picture. It's me. Maybe I should see what that would look like as a woman.
I always like Seinfeld's joke about your driver's license. He's like, the picture should just be you going like, you know, because that's the face that the cop sees.
True. So we talked in the beginning of this week's show a little bit about the origins of the show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm going to be honest with you. In the beginning, I think it really was about us.
Yeah.
Like us wanting to do something creative and... Excuse me. That last segment with about my friend Anna really has me choked up.
Yeah, I noticed. I'm
doing a lot of coughing. I don't know if I breathed in some pollen or...
some black mold, maybe.
Some black mold. I don't know what happened. Anyway, to our future buyers, if you choose to sue us, there is no black mold at this house. That was a joke. To my knowledge, as I sit here right now, I have no knowledge of any black mold. Right. Got to get that. My lawyers told me to say that.
Mm.
Anyway, so we talked about where the show started, and I'll admit, full transparency, I wish I could say everything I do for other people, and it was really about others and the community. But no, it was about you and me wanting to do something fun and maybe get famous.
Right? And make people laugh.
Yeah, make people laugh because it feels good when I make people laugh.
Yeah.
But as the show has evolved, I've seen how people react to it and mm-hmm. kind of the types of people that are sort of gravitate toward the show.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me feel even better that we're having fun doing this. We love doing it,
mm-hmm.
but I think people are getting something out of it. Right. And
I hope so.
It's sort of like finding your people. Right. It's a way to find people who enjoy the same things you enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
Right. One of the things about the internet is it's like drinking from a fire hose. There's just so much thrown at you every day. How do you figure out what's good, what's not good? What will I like, what will I not like?
Mm-hmm.
That's why finding communities on the internet is so important. And so all of that is just to say this. You guys want to promote something you got going on, you got some creative project going on, or you found some new, you started a band, or, you know, you started a Facebook group, share it on our group.
Yeah.
That's perfectly fine. And Facebook, I believe, is starting to want groups and stuff to be more visible.
Yeah. Yes, they are. Because
they want to solidify these communities. So... if you want exposure for your thing, mm-hmm. post it on our group is probably a good way to do that, right?
Exposing your thing is the best way to get on our page.
If you put a picture of your penis on our page, it'll probably be reported to Facebook. If you're a woman and you want to post your woman version of a penis, I'm not going to report it.
I'm just saying. Well, I recommend instant messages.
Mm.
But along similar lines, even, you don't even have to ban. I don't care what it is. If you think it's funny, put it on the page. Yeah. If you think it's relevant to something we've talked about, put it on the page. If you think it's something that you would want us to talk about, put it on the page. In other words, just put it on the page. You know, we do enough of that. We put a lot of stuff out there. And in fact, I'm even going to start putting more of, you know, the stuff I put on my own, you know, page, I'm also going to transfer over to the Don't Panic page, group page, just because, to kind of like spread it out a little more. Yeah. But it does, you know, you don't have to be a professional anything. If you think something's funny, you know, Superfan James, you send me stuff daily. And my typical response is, save it for the show. Or put it on the page, you know?
Put it on the page.
Yeah.
Or the group.
Oh, that's what I mean. Yeah. Put it on the group page.
I like it. As I was talking, this is why my rants so often go in these circuitous paths. Because as I was talking and I said, you found your people, I thought of this story that my client told me the other day. And it is so relevant to this show. I didn't want to tell her to go listen to the show because it might harm my livelihood. But I have a feeling she would like the show. She is telling me that she went to her, I don't know, 10-year reunion, maybe 15
ooh,
year.
I was like, ooh, she's a baby.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been 10. she's probably mid-30s. What would that be? Probably 15 or 20
mm-hmm.
year reunion.
Yeah, by your 20s, you're, yeah.
She's like, yeah, I went to a small school. Everybody kind of knew each other, but there were still the cliques, right? There were the mm-hmm. jocks. There were the nerds. There were the
socias, the greasers.
Yeah, thank you. And she said she goes to the high school reunion and she says, you know, by this point, everybody's over all that stuff, right? You would think.
Yeah.
But no, right? So she said they get there and she ends up at a table with the nerds, right?
That's where I was.
She's sitting there with her husband. And she said when she was in high school, she kind of floated between the groups, kind of like I did.
Mm-hmm. You know?
But she said that she didn't, she said that the smart kids and the jocks were a little bit too goody-goody for her. Mm-hmm. She was kind of a troublemaker. So she gravitated more to the jocks because they were more troublemakers too. But anyway, she didn't hang out with the nerds a lot. But she gets to the high school reunion. She's sitting there talking to them and they're all like engineers, plastic surgeons, you know, just these.
The like geeks will inherit the earth.
Rocket scientists, you know, that kind of thing. So uh-huh. she's talking to them and like really into the conversation. And her friends are texting her while she's sitting there. And she's looking at her, like her friends from high school that are at a different table are texting her. And she just like, why are you hanging out with the nerds, right? And I just look at her. I'm like, really? That's still going on? She's like, I know, right? I said, some people peak in high school. She's like, I think that was these people. So she showed it. She's like, I just showed it to my husband. And she goes, these are my people now.
Yeah. Well, I've mentioned this on the show before, but when I did my 20-year reunion, we were at a table and it was myself and our friend Chuck and you remember Danny Worley?
Yeah.
We were all sitting at this table. And there was a couple of the people there that weren't like in our friend zone. And one of the girls that was at the table that wasn't in our friend zone that I didn't even really remember that well. She was dying the whole time we were talking. And she's like, you know, if I would have known you guys were this funny back in school, we would have hung out more. And me, Chuck, and Danny all looked at each other like, we haven't changed. What? You know, this is what we were like the whole time, you know. Clearly somebody had an epiphany at some point in their life that made them realize that high school was high school.
And like if some hot chick like, man, we should have hung out more in high school, I'd just be like, you know what? Let me find a time machine or something to hit you with.
I'll hit you with a time machine.
Yeah. Right? Just before I get in it and go back and say, in 20 years, you're going to wish that you'd hooked up with me.
Mm.
And then my entire life will change. And then I won't be as funny. That's part of the thing. If we had gotten like what we thought we wanted in high school, we probably wouldn't be nearly as funny.
No. That goes along the line of the one joke I posted on the group that had the guy that come out of the time machine going, I killed Hitler. And the guy's right. Like, who?
God, I love that. I saw that. We were on a road trip when I saw that. And we had like a 45-minute conversation in the car about that. I was like, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
For the listeners who didn't see it, basically, the scientist is getting out of the time machine. It says time machine over it, so you know it's a time machine.
Yeah.
He's getting out of the time machine. He's a scientist. You know he's a scientist because he's wearing a lab coat.
Yeah, lab coats were standard issue back in the day.
And there's another scientist, and you know the other guy's a scientist because he also is wearing a lab coat. And he's sitting there at his desk, like, working on science things. Scientist steps out of the time machine and goes, I went back in time and I killed Hitler. And the other scientist looks at him and goes, who? And I was like, I brought that up and the kids are kind of like, I don't understand. And I explain it to them. They're like, oh, yeah. Mm. And I said, there is a story in here somewhere about a guy who shows up out of, like, just goes to the media or somewhere and explains that he killed Adamson. And they're like,
yeah.
Who's Adamson? Well, he was, you know, Adamson, you know, the guy that won the presidency in 2016 and, you know, started World War III. They're like, really? And like the whole movie would be, or the whatever, it'd be sort of like a Life on Mars situation where you're trying to figure out as a viewer, did this guy really get in a time machine and do this, or is he insane? Right.
Well, it's like the time paradox. Okay, the time paradox always is, well, you know, if you go back and you squash a butterfly in 1717 on, you know, whatever island in the Caribbean, everything will be changed. How do we know it hasn't happened like a dozen times? And honestly, who the hell cares?
Right.
If you go back in time and just, you know, kill Hitler and people don't know who the hell Hitler is and your life changed drastically, who the hell cares? Because you wouldn't even know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd be like, okay, I went back and I killed Genghis Khan, right? So
75% of the planet has no idea where its DNA comes from.
Right? and like, you know, those 40 million people, or however many people he killed, lived.
Mm-hmm.
And which one of them is Hitler? You know, or the equivalent of Hitler. And which, you know, it is that, all right, so people that don't get into science fiction might be like, well, who cares, right? But it does get to the whole philosophical thing that says, why have any regrets about the trajectory of your life? It's like that story about the... I just heard this story the other day. It's like somebody comes up to a monk and says, oh, you just had a son. That's great news. And he's like, who knows about these things, whether it's good news or bad news. It's like, oh, okay. So, you know, years go by and he comes back and he's like, oh, I heard your son broke his leg. That's bad news. He's like, who knows about these things? You know, what's good news? What's bad news? And comes back another number of years. He's like, hey, I heard the government came by, the thugs came by and kidnapped all the able-bodied, you know, young boys to take them off to war. And he's like, they didn't take your son because he had that broken leg. That's good news. He's like, ah, who knows about these things, whether it's good news or bad news. And anyway, the whole thing goes on and on. And just the kid's life happens, right?
Yeah.
And what happens, happens. And who knows what's good news and what's bad news. It just is. It just happens, you know.
And the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon.
Little boy blue and the man in the moon. When you're coming home, son, I don't know when.
But I think we got enough for a show now.
Alrighty. Couple of messages for you guys. Don't forget about don'tpanicradioshow.com.
Mm-hmm.
That's easy to share with your friends. I mean, you're hanging out. People are like, hey, what are you listening to these days? Don'tpanicradioshow.com. Check it out. You can go to iTunes if you, Apple Podcasts, if you're into that. Search for Don't Panic Radio Show Vincent, Don't Panic Radio Show Schultz. You'll find it. Give us a rating, man. We need some ratings. We got zero ratings. Rate it. Give us a comment. Share it on your Facebook. Share the group. Put it on the page.
Yeah, put it on the page.
Put it on the page and share the page. I mean, share the group. We got a couple of safeguards in there now so that we don't have random people joining. We now know people who request. We got a couple of ways that we'll know if they're legit.
Yeah.
So share it. Get your friends to join. All right. What else did I want to tell people? Go to William Wright. Look him up. Oh, yeah. We'll probably do another Worlds of Maybar recap show sometime in March.
Mm-hmm.
So you got that to look forward to. More softcore history. Keep those requests coming in. I didn't know anything about Cesar Chavez other than the shirts, you know. And something about grapes. And Grapes of Wrath, right?
Yeah.
So thanks to my brother Mike for that suggestion. Any other suggestions? Keep them coming in. Any other suggestions? Keep them coming in. Other than that, any parting words?
Don't confuse Cesar Chavez with Che Guevara.
For Paul Schultz, I'm Steve Vinson. Nothing just her. Just her was true. True.
Hey, didn't somebody say something about a cold beer after work?